Hi, More Than This listener. Dave here. If you've been enjoying the show, please consider leaving a positive review on iTunes. It's quick to do, and it will help more people discover the show. Thanks for listening. You're listening to More Than This, the podcast where Christian faith and reason explore reasons for Christian faith.
Life's not a sequence program from the sky, but it's a story woven up, down, in and out, like stitches in.
If you enjoy our show, please consider supporting us for as little as $1 a month on Patreon. Check out our site at www.patreon.com/morethanthispod. Thank you. This week, we talk about the different ways people go about understanding who they are. The episode is called Too Unique for My Own Good. This one gets a bit deep. Enjoy. Hello.
Hello, Dave.
Hello, Kate.
It looks like you wanted a response to that.
I did. I was hoping the listeners would respond, just in their car or out
hello,
in their jog.
Hello. I'm doing it for you.
I was imagining the fanfare of response. But I'll settle for something from you, Kate. That's all right.
All right.
Don't let it ruin your identity. I just gave away the topic of today's episode. Today we're talking about identity, which is exciting. So, Kate, we're going to take it in a few directions. We're probably going to bring it back to sort of the religious realm somewhat, in terms of how identification and identity from a religious perspective, some of the ways we were maybe told to identify ourselves growing up that sort of seemed like they had a lot of weight, right,
mm-hmm.
Kate?
Mm-hmm.
But first off, I'd like to just talk a little bit about what I mean by identity, what we're going to be talking about today. So this is an area of research interest for me, Kate, so I'll try not to get too eggheady about it.
Oh, but you probably will. I'll bring you back down to earth. Don't worry. I'll keep you fun and relatable to the young people, Dave.
Boy, if you can do that, I'll open my checkbook and say, I don't know. I wasn't fun and relatable to young people when I was a young person. So we'll see. You never know. You can turn over a new leaf. But so the idea of identity, it gets tossed around a lot right now. We often have something in front of it, right? Think gender identity, identity politics. We're always talking about different identities as part of the sort of progressive world we live in. You hear a lot about different identities. Intersectionality, maybe you've heard of. We're going to barely skim the surface of a lot of those things. But when we're talking about identity, we're basically talking about your concept of self. Who are you? When you answer the question, who are you? What is it that comes to mind and what comes out? How do you know who you are and what you represent in the world? Is that fair, Kate? Do you have to drag me down to the ground and make me relatable to young people again?
No, I'm tracking with you. As a young person. the standing joke here is I'm like 2 or 3 years younger than Dave. But I like to play that card. So
the age discrepancy selectively grows out of convenience too. When Kate wants
is it two to 3 years?
I think so. Yeah.
He doesn't want to say his age on the podcast. So
I've said it many times.
Have you really?
Yeah. I'm 43.
I'm 39. So it's actually 4 years.
Yeah. Pushing.
I did that math really quickly in my head.
Nice, because you still have that mental acuity of a younger person.
Exactly. I'm not over 40 yet.
Very good. Anyhow, so you know how we usually start a lot of episodes. We kind of give you groundwork, lay a little groundwork, do some framing, and talk about identity. And the way I see identity, there's a lot of different ways to look at it. But one of the main ways we want to look at it is looking at sort of extrinsic and intrinsic identity, or external and internal identity. So there are ideas, and I think in an individualistic world, we have the rhetoric, at least we talk about identity, as much more of an individualistic coming from within, an internal thing, right? Every time you hear about like adolescents and young people figuring out who they are, they're like trying on identities, right? You know, remember Kate, back in the day, it was a big deal to be like goth. Do you remember goth?
I mean, Dave, it was a little before my time, but yes, I do remember.
It was not before your time. It was in the 2000s.
Was it grunge? Wasn't grunge a thing?
Grunge,
too?
They're
not the same thing.
Think about the classic high school movies. Like, you got the jocks and the preps and the nerds and the band kids and whatever.
The cheerleaders.
Else. Cheerleaders. All of these things are, sort of external identities, but they, there's this part where we believe that in order to have an identity that's really valid and real, it has to come from within inside of you. It can't come from somebody else. It has to be authentic and ring from true from within, and you construct, right? The big idea with individualism is that you construct your own identity. You kind of are the sovereign that's going out to make it, right? On the external side, that's where you're in a system that confers an identity on you. They confer a label on you. They confer you to a class, a status, whatever it might be. And the real point of all of this is, like, what has the power to stick? You could sort of say, I want to be seen as an artist, right? Like, that's going to be my identity. I am choosing that as my identity. But if nobody will pay you for your art and everybody thinks you suck at art, it's kind of hard to hold that up, right?
Mm-hmm. So that's the case of your internal not matching your external.
Yes. Well, yes, internal, your failed internal, but you still might think, I get to determine, I'm the lord of it. A great example of this is people who try out for American Idol. You ever watch some of the early episodes?
Yes.
And people in their family have told them that you're an amazing singer and you're like the second coming of Carrie Underwood. And then they go and audition and they are just screeching the house down. They just sound terrible, can't carry a tune in a bucket. And they get brought down to earth pretty quickly, right? This identity that they were trying to project in the world that a few loving, well-intended family members upheld was not upheld by broader society, right? So there's always this tension between, can I construct my own identity or is it just handed to me? So that's sort of the basic framing I have in mind as I go into this. So we can think a lot about what are some of the sources of our identity, because we don't even know some of the categories that are available to us, right? This is kind of what it means to grow up. And as you sort of grow apart from your parents, a lot of growing older is like exploring your identity and seeing what different degrees of freedom are available, right? So you might, I don't know, you might dye your hair. You do silly things like you just like, I'm going to try to deviate from what I've grown up with in some way to differentiate myself. Identity, there's a lot about differentiation too, standing out as separate. And again, when you're in an individualistic society like the US, that's going to be a big focus. And collectivistic subcultures and cultures, fitting in and not deviating is really important for measuring your worth as a person. So I will say too, identity has a lot to do with feeling like you're worth something, right? So if you try to be a lot of things and you are not conferred, like think about how subcultures start, Kate. This is where it's getting eggheady.
I was just going to say, Dave, I don't know how subcultures start.
But like countercultural movements, it's people who weren't accepted in the majority, right? Mm-hmm. They tried to be often, but they did not find themselves able to be. So they created another movement, right? That was either counter to the popular culture or just underneath it, you know, all the burnouts, right? Like that couldn't fit in with the jocks in high school. Like they might have tried, but they weren't athletes or whatever. And then they sort of created their own band of friends where they had a different set of things that were cool.
I feel like this is one big breakfast club. Like I'm thinking about
it. It kind of is.
Yeah.
So feelings of worth and identity are totally put together. If you're low self-worth, your identity is probably not very strong either, right? So the big question for us, this is a podcast focused on Christian faith and reason, reasons for Christian faith. You know the tagline if you've listened to the first 7 seconds of our podcast more than once. So today, Kate and I had been talking, and Kate has some thoughts on the idea of like how it is that we sort of choose from and select identities within the faith community, within the Christian world, and how does that inform our sort of overall identity, who we think we are as a total person, not just like a church person, but a total person. So one of the ways we do that, I think, is the use of different labels of different kinds. That's sort of across the board, but I think religion has a whole set of them, Kate, and I think you had some thoughts on some of the labeling and the labels that are available.
Yeah, I mean, that was Dave's more highbrow introduction to the concept. I had a much more lowbrow question. I can tell you why I wanted to talk about this, how I brought this episode up. I was like, Dave, I'm having a real hard time. I stutter now when people ask me. So I work for a Catholic institution, and my son goes to Catholic school. And so I often am asked, are you Catholic? I mean, it's just kind of, or it'll become clear. Like, for example, when I didn't know the difference between First Communion and Confirmation, my son was in third grade last year and they were doing their First Communion, but I was getting that confused. I was using it interchangeably with Confirmation. One of my friends pulled me aside and she was like, you know, those are two different things, don't you? Like, they do their First Communion now, and then like in middle school, they do their Confirmation. And I was like, thanks for the tip. No, I did not know what those were. So in any case, sometimes because of things that I do or say I don't know, people will say, oh, are you Catholic? And I want to answer with what I am, and I stutter, or I'm not sure what I want to say. Up until probably 3 or 4 years ago, without much hesitation, I would have said, oh, I'm evangelical. And now that word, not because I don't think I'm even, mind you, Dave, it's not because I don't necessarily think that I'm evangelical. That is still the label that fits me in the way that I understand, in the way that I understand it, or in like the technical definition of it. But I don't want to be associated. I don't want, so I don't want people to think that I'm even, I don't like all the other things that come along with being evangelical. And I don't want to use that phrase.
Part of your identity is you don't want to be identified with, right?
Exactly. And so that was my, again, more lowbrow, the genesis for the episode was me saying, there's something there. I'm feeling really conflicted about what I should say and why don't I want to use the label evangelical anymore? What does that mean? Am I still evangelical?
And I think a lot of you're touching on something really important is identity is about where you fit, right? And when you have an identity crisis, it's often about not knowing where you fit anymore. Like, so this is really funny. So that Kate, this actually touches on you and I's history. So Kate may feel like this is unfair, but she's here so she can clap back at me.
All right, I will.
But historically, Kate has liked to paint me as really, really conservative, to her very, very liberal. And
progressive, Dave. I don't like the word liberal. I like progressive. But anyways, go ahead.
Oh, then I'm not progressive. So
yeah, I'm just kidding.
I was going to say, it's funny. But either way, Kate would sort of paint me as this sort of provincial, like, you know, Bible thumper who, like, you know, just towed the you know, Republican line. And I'm like, Kate, you know, I vote Democrat in most elections. And like, doing the podcast, we're probably more close together than we are apart. But fast forward to my wife and I moving to Seattle from Ohio. And Ohio, we probably feel left of center politically. I will tell you, when I moved to Seattle, I was like, whoa, 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 whoa. I am not this, right? I am not like way left-wing progressive. I'm just not. And there I felt very conservative in some ways because of the context I was in. And it was an identity crisis because I couldn't identify with the group that I thought. I thought I was crazy liberal because I lived in Columbus, Ohio or Indiana. And now I'm like in Seattle and I'm like, well, I'm not out this far. And it was a very weird thing where I'm like, I can't use that label anymore. Like it means something different here. And some of that is the meaning that has shifted over the years. 15 years ago, even if you were at the same point in your life, or 30 years ago, you might have evangelical might have meant that you felt like you belonged to that group more than you do now and what it connotes, right?
That is a really good point because it is not so much about the set of beliefs that are generally ascribed to evangelicals that I think I necessarily disagree with. It is all the other things. It's like when I think about, I try to put myself in the shoes of the average person when they think about an evangelical and what I imagine based on like the news media or frankly just what I see people posting on social media who are evangelicals, I think that's not me. Like these people who I thought I had a lot in common with, I'm like, that's pretty different, right? Like I don't think that we agree on a lot of things or like, oh, no, that's not what I want people. And in fact, I think I was telling you this story. I had a reusable shopping bag that someone from my church had given to me that their child goes to a Christian school, like an evangelical Christian school, private school in Chicago, which I'm sure is a fine school. But someone at my son's soccer practice saw that I had the bag and said, oh, do your kids go to Daystar? And it was interesting because I knew oh, I could be wrong, but I felt like I saw them fitting me in. They were like, okay, Daystar parent, like this particular school. And I was like, oh, no. I was like, I'm like, my kids don't go here. Someone just gave me this bag. Like someone gave this to me. That's not where my kids go to school. And I thought, oh, why was I so quick to not want to be labeled as my kids going to that school? What did I think that was going to tell that person about my views on faith, on politics, just what kind of a person that I was? I was like nervous about it. I mean, and I think part of you and I have talked about this recently, you know, as you know, I attend a church that is evangelical, and I was told by that church that I actually could not be a member because of my view. I mean, I also feel like evangelicals maybe don't want me either, Dave. That was like kind of a clear sign when they were like, you can be a friend of this church but not a member because your views don't align with us. You mostly do, but we don't want you in that. That's what I felt like they were saying. Like, you can't be in this club because you don't align fully. And that kind of got me thinking too. Am I an evangelical? Am I still? Is that still the right label? Right. Is that the right identity?
And is it salient? Is it important? And why are labels important? That's what I often think about. So there's they didn't originate the concept, but and I forget the second author's name, but there's a book by Peter Berger and somebody else is a sociologist of religion. He was, and then a philosopher called In Praise of Doubt. I don't know if you've read it.
No.
But they talk about the concept of foreground and background, and I'll borrow these for the purpose of talking about identity. So background are kind of all the institutions and things that work in society that sort of bring meaning and automate processes, and foreground is sort of like the action and like where you're kind of determining things and doing things independent on your own. And you know, really highly automated societies have a lot of background and very little foreground. And I feel like when it comes to identity, like we have sort of distanced ourselves from the role of institutions and we really think of ourselves as autonomous. Whether it's true or not, we see ourselves like as being huge and in the foreground, right? Like you think about your common, this is what, you know, we talk about in the developmental phase of being an adolescent. You think you're the star of a movie that everybody's watching, but in reality, nobody's watching, but you feel like everything is scrutinized. So if you trip at the food court at the mall and any friends are around, it is literally embarrassing because you weigh that as though the world was watching this. I was on the red carpet and I just like had a huge gaffe, but that's kind of the way we're taught to think about identity now too, where institutions don't matter as much. We kind of borrow their power when we need to, but we kind of create our own story. So anything regarding a label, it has to be to run through the filter of us. You know what I mean? Like with nuance, like, and it always has kind of been that way where it's like, we want to sort of like nuance it, especially with something like evangelical. And the more a label comes up with a lot of baggage or varied meanings, the more we want to do that, right? Because evangelical used to be a set of doctrinal beliefs. Then it became more of a political movement. Then it became, you know, I mean, like it's right. It's morphed and it's grown, and it's like that's a lot to call yourself. It just has a lot more baked into it. So I sense your tension, and I have it too, where it's like, boy, this means a lot more than it used to. I used to be able to say this, and it wasn't as complicated to own it, right? Either from my perspective or the perspective of the person, the institutions that sort of comprise the label.
I honestly used to take, I would say that the reason I used to not hesitate, I have, so after going to Christian college, then I went to Tulane, which is a set for grad school, and then I came to Notre Dame. So Tulane is a non-religious institution, and Notre Dame obviously is a Catholic institution, but I almost felt like it was a helpful distinctive marker. Does that make sense? Like that was a helpful shorthand to introduce, or I hope this comes across right. I don't know if you've experienced this in institutions of higher education, that evangelicals, maybe not as much anymore, but still are kind of thought of as not that intellectual or perhaps not that deep of thinkers or not that smart. And so I think especially when I was at Tulane, that was part of my saying, like, no, I'm here and I'm good at what I'm doing and I'm evangelical, right? Like I sort of, that was almost like a distinctive marker. I was not embarrassed at all. I didn't feel conflicted about it.
But you drew a line. You drew nuance. Like, I'm not your typical, evangelical. I'm here. I'm one that's really good at thinking.
Sort, I guess so. That was part of my why I was saying it. Like, I wanted them to know that, like, evangelicals are not dumb. I mean, which I certainly don't think they are. And then when I was at Notre Dame, it wasn't like, I actually think it was pretty free and it wasn't a bad thing. They're like, oh, very interesting. Oh, that's so interesting. Because, you know, faith, a lot of people of faith were here. And
people come around and take pictures of you.
Yeah. Because they're token evangelical. But I think in recent years, and this is, Dave, you and I have danced around this topic. You know, the phrase deconstruction is really popular, or ex-evangelical. There's a lot of people that I think we probably have a lot of things in common with who have sort of said, I can't even use that label. I'm deconstructing my faith, or I'm an ex-evangelical. I'm moving away because there's so much baggage, or there's so much that comes with the phrase, with the descriptor or label of evangelical. And that doesn't feel, I don't want to say sensitive, or I understand where those people are coming from. But that doesn't also feel right to me. Like, I don't want to exit yet.
Right. And I think a lot of that also can come down, if I'm taking sort of a critical lens to it, as nobody gets to define me. Everybody's unique and special. This is sort of the modern thing. Everybody's a princess when they're a little girl, although they all buy the same mass-produced Disney dress. Like, nobody's really a princess, right? Princess is about selectivity. And if everybody's a princess, being a princess doesn't mean a whole hell of a lot, right?
Right.
Like, you know, when the tiaras are plastic, it's not much of a distinction. You know, and I'm not.
Don't tell my 3.5-year-old that, Dave. Keep that bit of knowledge to yourself.
I know, but it's the reality is that we don't always grow out of that either. Where it's like, no institution can fully encompass the largesse of me, right? I contain volumes, the Walt Whitman. You know, like that's, and it's great as far as it goes, but we can find ourselves being so unique as that we don't really feel like we fit in anywhere. There's this intoxication of feeling like, I'm not saying this is what you did, but like the idea of like, no, I disagree with one point of this. I need to distinguish myself so I don't fit in with the group. Or I, you know, this is the tension we find ourselves in, where it's like, how do you coexist and find greater meaning structures, which is what identity primarily is trying to do, is find out where you fit in the world. Where you really are also faced with the tension, like, I'm so unique, you can be so unique not as to not fit anywhere. And this is the modern identity problem as I see it, because we have a loneliness epidemic, right? We have, you know, huge upticks in anxiety and depression, and more among younger people than older people, which is counter what you would think based on life expectancy, right? Anxiety and depression about the natural sort of people dying and as you get older and partners moving on and the loneliness that comes with that, that's more expected. You don't expect your average 18-year-old to rate themselves and exhibit more loneliness, depression, and anxiety than someone who's in middle age or older. But that's what we're finding. And these are people who have been raised the most in this time of lower trust of larger institutions, where institutions have that foreground, like I mentioned, is bigger and bigger and bigger, and there's less background. There's basically more for you to try to, you're told at least, self-determine and figure out and try to prove to the world that you are. Your theory of yourself, you have to prove it.
So Dave, I guess, apologies to listeners, although maybe many of you are parents, I often bring this back to like, okay, well, I have my own stuff to deal with. But I think when you're saying that about young people, I'm thinking as my role as a parent, what responsibility do I have? I mean, if I'm going through this a little bit of like an identity crisis or whatever, like my evangelical or not, and I think about what am I passing on to my children, right? Like, what is their identity going to be? How important is it for me to just stick with this so that they have an identity? I mean, do you know, like, yeah. I mean, I don't know. I mean, the other thing too, that's maybe a bigger question, but maybe a smaller point is that part of it is that I wonder, why can't I go even instead of going more specific, I think I actually want to go broader with my identity and say I'm Christian.
Yeah.
Or I'm Protestant. Like, those are even bigger labels than evangelical. Like, evangelical is even more specific. And I think I would be very satisfied. I'm fine with being identified like broad, writ large with the Protestant church. Fine. Maybe that's just a better answer. And that's still a true one.
Yeah.
Because evangelicals are Protestant by definition. It's just that Protestant is a bigger tent, wouldn't you say?
Yeah. I like that. Honestly, I think that being in touch with a larger story about making yourself small and fitting yourself into a larger context is a better way to go about identity than trying to make yourself really big, because that doesn't tend to work. That's really hard to uphold. Like, there's too much identity labor that goes into that. When you're swept up in a larger story and a larger institution, I'm not trying to romanticize that either, because there could be excesses there too. But for one thing, let me just rabbit trail. Kids are not ready for all this identity talk this early, where my sister-in-law the other day was like, I didn't show my kids two new TV shows I found because they both featured a character that was like seven and exploring their gender identity. Kids are not developmentally ready for that. That is adults projecting down their own identity quibbles and a lot of, you know, some of the progressive decisions that we have around, you know, identity politics, passing that on down. Just like we've talked about, Kate, deconstructing faith. You can't pass down all of your deconstruction to your three-year-old. They're not developmentally ready for it. And that's not me being prudish. That's just me being reasonable and looking at like literature, right? Like, any researcher would within their mind, no matter what their rhetoric or politics is, would tell you, like, this is not adaptive for kids to think they have every identity under the sun to consider at like age 3, 4, or 5, right? And like giving your kid like, well, you know, is God really good? Like, and how do we understand goodness? And, you know, philosophically, the Greeks thought of the good this way. You know, I mean, like, you can nuance it to death, but a three-year-old or your 10-year-old isn't ready for it.
Oh, no. And I think that they need...
And I'm not saying yours, but like your average.
Oh, yeah. I think that you're right, that they need... I just sense, again, I think from my 10-year-old, the questions that he asked in particular, right. he's looking to me for security and answers. He needs to feel safe. And I feel like the trick is to make them feel safe and to give them what answers that you believe are true. You don't have to give them every nuance of that answer, right? Like, right. You can give them the basic answer. And I also think, for me, one of the most important things about that, the where I would take it a step further, that maybe it was done when I was a child, is giving them more freedom to ask questions that they can't ask a question that's going to scare me. I think that's the thing that your kids, and I think it's sometimes to say, okay, to say, you know what? That's the right question to ask. I don't know if I have an answer for that. I'm going to think about it more, but there's some questions that are kind of hard. Some things we might not know. Does that make sense? Like, I think you want to give them security in what you can, but also be able to say, well, not every question has a finite answer.
I think it's true that kids ask theologically astute questions that are way above their pay grade. It's almost like a kid asking, you ever see the sitcom where the young kid asks where babies come from, and the parents are like freaking out and they're thinking like, we have to talk about all these like sexual ethics and all these things and, you know, all this biology, and they really want to know that they came home from the hospital, right? Like, that's all they want to know. So it's like this question that triggers this very nuanced, like, complicated thing to us, but maybe that's not what they're asking. That's what the question means to us, but it's not what it means to them.
Right, right. I'm going to rabbit hole just for a tiny bit, since you already did earlier. I'm going to do a little one, because it's my son might kill me someday for telling this story. But when my son was like probably 5 or 6 years old, driving him home from school, it's a pretty short drive, and all of a sudden out of the back of the car, he pipes up, "Mom, where do babies come from?" And oh man, the emotions that were at a stoplight. And I'm thinking, oh man, how do I answer this? And I was like, well, I'm just going to answer it in the most developmentally appropriate way, I think. And I said, well, what happens is daddies have a seed and they put it inside the mom's body, and the mom has an egg, and the egg and the seed grow a baby that grows inside the mom's tummy. And then the mommy goes to the hospital, which in retrospect, well, whatever. That's what I said. I said, the mom goes to the hospital and the baby comes out. And I thought, all right, that was pretty, like, you know, somewhat specific or whatever. My son's real quiet for a minute. He goes, Mom, you forgot an important part. And I said, what? He said, you didn't tell me how the dad puts the seed inside the mom. And I was like, oh, that's for another time. It was just hilarious to me that the one thing I tried to gloss over, he like wanted to know the mechanics. He wanted to know the mechanics of that. But the really funny part of that story is when I got home later that night, I told my husband like what I had said. And you should have seen the look that he gave me. He was like, that was way too much information. What? Don't you just tell him that a stork brings the baby? And I was like, well, that seems fantastical. He said, that is the wrong. It was just hilarious to me that we had total opposite ideas about what the right appropriate level of detail for a 6-year-old kid was. And apparently he thought that mine, I thought it maybe wasn't detailed enough. And he was like, no, way too detailed. Anyways, that was a rabbit hole, but I just think it's funny that you're right. I think that my son, you're right. He didn't need the full. I still think I could have given him somewhat more detail, but he was not asking like these existential, you know, questions. Or frankly, I think sometimes we bring our own baggage into answering questions too. Like, they're not necessarily, I think you have to recognize that things that you have thought about or worried about, don't superimpose that onto them when they're asking that question as well, right?
Yes. Yeah, I do.
But anyway, sorry, Dave, can I say one other thing about different kinds of identity, or were you going somewhere? You have a look on your face like you were going somewhere.
I'll put a pin in it. Go ahead.
Oh, well, I was just going to say, I mean, we're talking about faith identities, but it is interesting to me. I mean, obviously there are other identities or other markers that kind of play into that as well. Like some that are like obvious for the most part, like what the ethnic or racial category that you know, might fall into, or your gender, some of those other things too. I'm just thinking if someone asked me to describe myself in 5 words, or like, you know, if you've ever done that exercise, I would probably say I am a Christian mother, but I'm going into roles, but a Christian mother and wife. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, I'm thinking about which identities are most important.
But if you break it down, it's really identity is about finding of conditions of worth in the world, because we might have multiple identities, but the ones that we play up the most are the ones that we have the most pride in, and the ones that we have the least, you know, up there, we have the most shame, right? So a man, say, could be a worker, a husband, and a father, and a son, and a million other things, but he kind of sucks at being a husband and a father, but he's really good at work. So maybe he spends a lot more times at work because he feels more worth it, right? He feels more worth. He feels like has more success. He has more pride in it, and he sucks at being a dad, and he has a bad relationship with his kids. So both of those are identities, but the one that he goes toward more is the one where he feels more pride. Think about every sort of subculture festival: gay pride, black pride, Latino pride. Why are these all pride festivals? Because the opposite of pride is shame, right? Now it's like a weird thing from a certain perspective to say something natural is something you're proud of, right? But if you've been in a position where the default has sort of been you are not in the norm and there's shame, it's still an identity that you have, and you want to be able to be proud of it, right? People don't want to be a crappy dad or a crappy spouse or whatever identity or crappy, whatever it is, like you don't want to be looked on as less than, right? Or you don't want to be less than in that role. So part of our balking at evangelical is that maybe it's a label we're no longer that proud of, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So, I mean, I think identity is our concept of self, but it's really about our worth in the world too, where we feel a sense of worth, and we're trying to ultimately gain a higher sense of pride and worth in the world and diminish shameful aspects, right? So you can either work with an identity that is enforced on you, like you don't really get to choose your race, right? Or your ethnic background. That's a broad statement, but you might want to cultivate a sense of pride in that, right? Makes sense. And if you feel like the popular culture is so against evangelicalism, and this is some of the clapback we're hearing from evangelicals, is that they're proud of being evangelical, right? They want to have a sense of pride with it. People who maintain the label. And I think you and I might find identity in enough other places that we don't need that, right? And maybe it is more, like you said, morphing to a higher label of just being Protestant or Christian. But it's also about belonging somewhere too, right? And Protestant doesn't, maybe doesn't really invoke that same level of belonging for someone, you know? So there's always that consideration of pride and belonging factor that go together.
Yeah. And I think, again, just reflecting for me personally, like I was feeling a little bit like, am I still here? And then they were, and then the very evangelical churches I was at was like, yeah, no, you don't really, right? Like they kind of said to me,
you don't belong.
You don't belong here. And so I think that, yeah, I think that's a good point. Like if you, it's, and it's also about when do labels put distance between you and other people, the labels that you choose?
Yes.
Because that's another concern I have with using the phrase evangelical, whether it's right or whether it's wrong, whether it's fair or not, the caricature that people have of what an evangelical is, if that puts distance between me and a person or if that shuts down, I mean, for people who really know me, it would come out, well, this is the church I go to, or this is what I believe, that would come out. But when I'm just like meeting somebody, I want to be truthful, but not use, again, not just divide us from the beginning for like no reason.
Yeah.
You know?
So, I mean, having an identity, unless you just say human, the more exclusive, the more meaning it often confers on your life, right? To say, I was in the armed services. Great. I was a Navy SEAL. Does that mean something different from an identity perspective? Why? It's more exclusive, right? It means something different in people's minds, intersubjectively, right? Across minds, across people's brains in a culture or society, it has a higher status. And when the status of something gets lower, you probably want to distance yourself from it, right? Evangelical status has gone lower in popular conception. Boy, if you read The Guardian, the UK newspaper, like I have it all, it's become virulently anti-Christian. Christians are considered like idiots, pernicious to society, destructive bigots. Like they're really outspoken. I can imagine if I were in England, even saying I was a Christian, there's no nuance I can add to it. It's like, it's just categorical. If you're a Christian, you're kind of like a fanatic that is looking to set society back hundreds of years. You know what I mean? Like, and who knows, the US, we could get there too.
Well, but, how would I say this? I don't know. Maybe it's the journalism that I consume that I haven't seen. I don't feel like it's a mean spirit necessarily. I'm not saying it's not, there aren't some outlets that don't have like a mean spirit towards evangelicals. But I also feel like it's some of the stuff that evangelicals support now are prominent. Like I don't really think I have that much in common with Jerry. Well, I do have some core beliefs in common with Jerry Falwell, but that's not who I want to be my representative in the world. I think we're in this age where there's a couple of individuals who get identified with evangelicalism who are kind of broadly identified, and that's not the picture. Like
right.
The Christian Broadcasting Network, or you know, Pat Robertson and Jerry Falwell, and some of these people that might like come to mind. What's his name?
Those are a bit older at this point, but yeah.
But I think that if you look at people who identify as evangelical now, they're older, right? Like, isn't that skewing older?
All I'm saying, though, is that evangelicals from the inside would probably not use them as their markers, but people from the outside who are detractors are easy scapegoats, right? Like, your modern evangelical, most of us are not watching Pat Robertson. I didn't even know he was still alive. You know what I mean? Like, I get what you're saying, but you missed my point completely.
So, well, can I just push back on one part of that, though? I think that when you look at like surveys of evangelicals or like what they're saying that they believe, I think part of the problem here is you have people who maybe identify as evangelicals but don't share the same beliefs. It's a really big tent. I think the definition of what is evangelical, like what I think it is, or what I've historically understood it to be, gotten, people are identifying as evangelical who maybe it's just gotten to be like a broader swath of people, and it's sure. Not as, I don't know.
Well, this is my point. The whole point of me bringing up England and saying, you know, you broadening to the idea of Protestant or Christian as a bigger category, if that becomes the same as evangelical, where it's equally as vilified in society, how would that feel when you were like, okay, now just calling yourself a Christian is like all the freight of evangelicalism has been transferred to that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, no, a Christian is someone who votes a certain way and hates gay people. And you know what I mean? Like, if that became not just an evangelical, is that you can't distance yourself anymore by calling yourself a Christian. Like, I'm just saying identity, that's kind of how it goes. Like, if a society then says it's not just evangelicals, America, we have nuance because we have such a Christian taxonomy, right? Even though we're pretty slippery, and evangelical has become this huge category, like you said. Like, nobody's out there saying, like, Episcopalians are the problem. You know what I mean? Like, there's sections with, but if we just put everybody together that had any confessional aspect of Christianity, yeah, and said, all these people are terrible, all of them, like, hate women and, like, patriarchal and whatever else people say about evangelicals, if that crept to the idea of, we would have a hard time in our faith, right? Having an identity. Like, what would we say?
I mean, we could come up with a Christ follower. Whatever. You could probably keep...
You just keep proliferating terms, right?
Right.
Try to narrow it and hone it down and subculturize it, right?
So I don't get what the... Well, so do you, are we just... I don't know what the broader point is. Is your argument that we're stuck, like, whether people like it or don't like it, just stick with a label, even if you don't think that that is...
My point is, the more general you get, the less meaning comes from it. Like, you end up relying on other things. So we can keep aggregating, but to me, just to say I'm Protestant, that's a term that doesn't mean a lot to me, because I'm like, well, I like Catholics too, so maybe I'm just Christian. And it's like, well, what does that mean? Then it's like finding people around you that bring that to life for you, right? That identity to life for you, or having to explain it, right? There's no shorthand that works that can convey that status, where, like, tomorrow, if all of a sudden Ivy League schools, there were 400 of them instead of 8, be like, oh, I'm an Ivy League person. And people at Dartmouth would be like, no, but, like, I'm actual Ivy League. No, what do you mean? We're all Ivy League now. Everybody's just magically Ivy League. Like, it's like, oh, well, now it doesn't mean that much that I go to Dartmouth, Columbia, you know, Harvard, you know, I won't go through all 8, but I could. Where it becomes diffuse just from an identity perspective, we can't draw as much meaning from
that. So isn't that, though, that wouldn't that move moving us out of the forefront into the background?
It would.
Because you're removing your, you know what I mean? You're going more, I don't know, I'm just trying to figure out what the tension is there between.
If you're really reliant on the institution, but if we're not, then it doesn't, It's just, there is tension there, I think, still, because we're told to live in a foreground way. I think this is getting really nerdy, but...
Sorry, Dave. We already passed the nerdy.
Well, the more foreground you see, the more you see yourself as autonomous and selectively constructing your own identity, I think, paradoxically, the more blind you are to cultural influence. So here at the University of Notre Dame, where I used to go, my sociology prof taught an intro to social class. And basically, he was asking people questions about identity and individualism and all these things, and then asked them, like, where they bought their clothes, what phones they had, and everybody shopped at, like, the same two stores, you know, like, same two websites, and everybody thinks they're an individual, but everybody remarkably does the same things, right, in society. And he was just kind of getting at that point where it's like, we have the auspices of thinking we're individuals and creating our own unique identities, but all we're really doing often, if we're actually trapped in conformity by doing that. So we're even told the ways to rebel, right? Like, if you want to look different, color your hair a different color. But half the population has colored their hair blue or silver after Lady Gaga, right? Like, it's hardly unique anymore. You're trying to say I'm different, but even the way that you're different has been prescribed to you, right? So I think that by paradox, sometimes we see the effects of marketing more heavily. One of the big things that in modern and millennials we hear a lot in surveys is that they're influence free. Nobody influences them. This is an extension of individualism, right? But we've hardly been more monolithic in the apps that we use, you know what I mean, in the places we buy things and a lot of the trends, like, we're still very conformist. You know what I mean? So it's interesting to me that some of the times with this foreground and background stuff, we might think we're autonomous and individualistic, but we actually are just less informed about the institutions that are helping shape our lives. If that makes sense.
I think it does, but
I might be a conspiracy theorist too.
Well, we're towards the end of our time, but I just want to end with saying, so are you going to, if I start saying that I'm Protestant or I'm Christian and not evangelical, are you going to be like, oh.
Oh no, not at all. I'm just saying that ultimately there's something to get your head around there, and work you have to do to get from like, why am I saying I'm not evangelical anymore and now I'm this, and will that be as meaningful for you across the board as a Christian? Like if you were feeling really low in a lot of your other identities, like even still finding, like we talked about it today, about finding a place to worship that feels meaningful to you. You know, if you're thinking about moving churches, say, that still matters a whole lot, right? So like you can say you're Protestant, but within that you can say the real meaning comes of the church I go to and the establishment I'm in. Like it's still sort of a catch-all. You wouldn't be like, I sit at home and I feel very meaningful. I don't go to church anywhere. I don't do anything. I just check Protestant when surveys come.
Right.
And
right.
I feel very fulfilled in my identity because I checked Protestant. Like identity is more than a checkbox, right?
Yeah.
It's incarnational. So a lot of leaving evangelicalism and moving to a different box on the survey you fill out, that's not really the end of that identity, is it?
No.
So it's how you inhabit it that matters. And that probably might mean that you might change churches, right?
Mm-hmm.
That might have a concomitant move, but you also inhabit, if you stay in an evangelical church and you just say, I don't want to be thought of as an evangelical anymore, you probably inhabit that space a little bit different, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what I want to say.
Well, you know, my stretch maybe is to...
try to understand everything I said. Yeah, try.
Well, there's that, but also too, you know, is to, I will stay tuned. You might hear some more in future episodes about, does Kate stay at the church that doesn't want her, that is evangelical, or does she leave for another brand of evangelical church and adds another extra label, a progressive? Maybe I go to a progressive evangelical church. Evangelical, evangelical, potato, potato. Right? You say evangelical, I say evangelical.
Let's call the whole thing off.
All right. Well, thanks, friends, for sticking with us. And we hope to have you listen to us again soon. Life is not a sequence program from